everyone, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. Welcome back to another episode of the NBL Pocket Podcast, releasing late on Tuesday, the 26th of March. We're going to be going through prospectuses for... Prospectuses for teams going into NBL 20. Free agency, what rumors have come out thus far, what things have been asserted. We're going to go through the bottom eight teams, and then in the next episode, a week from now, we'll be going through the top four teams, and I'm hoping that Botti will be able to join me for that. Anyway, let's jump straight into it. So the last place finishers were the Cairns Taipans. They had a record of 6-22. I mean, they won that first episode. They won their first victory in round one, and then went on a massive losing streak, and then seemed to do pretty well late in the year. So, you know, they're a team that, as much as their record is poor, do have something to contribute. Let's go through the questions. So here's what I had going on. So my first question that I was going to ask about this team is, what went wrong? And I guess the biggest weaknesses they had this year were inconsistency, offensive lapses, and not being able to close in late game situations. They were hanging around in a lot of games, and I believe went to a number of overtimes. But I remember one win they eked out against, I think, Melbourne, in which they just completely fell over the line, had sort of an 8 or 10 point lead in the fourth quarter, and then just slowly didn't score a single field goal in the last 4 or 5 minutes. So they have to improve in that respect. A lot was said about Mallow Trimble and his usage rate, and I think he got a sort of B minus or C plus grade in the Cairns Post. I hope I'm naming the right publication for his season, and I think that's really unwarranted. I think he was better than that. Let's just go through their team and see who they've got. So Mike Kelly's going to return. He's got a year left on his contract. They've got Rob Lowe and Jared Kenny contracted. Lucas Walker had a club option. I believe Cairns have decided not to take that club option, letting him go into free agency and see what happens. They may re-sign him. It would appear very odd that they would let him go into free agency and then think to re-sign him, especially with a new club in the Southeast Melbourne Phoenix coming into the league. You would have thought if they were even semi-interested in keeping him, they would have taken that option. Maybe they're looking to get him back cheaper. Didn't have a great year. His inclusion in next year's roster for them would not be a huge priority. I don't think I'm speaking out of line there. So maybe there's part of that. So here are the big free agents, though, and I've got these highlighted. Mallow Trimble, Nate Jawai, DJ Newball, Devin Hall. So they're four guys who are not contracted for next year, and they would occupy most of the thought of the Taipans. And I would actually think it would be, obviously, Trimble's not a matter of if, not a matter of should, it's when and can. Not should we get him, can we get him back? I thought he was great. I think he's a good player. I think his usage was up. I think he's shown now, going back to Puerto Rico this offseason, that he can play in any system. He's not a usage rate guy. He is actually a skillful point guard, a guy who can create shots for himself and others. And that sort of ability in basketball, and particularly in the NBL, is priceless. Next on that list is DJ Newball. You know, I think if you can bring him back, as well. I don't think this team's problem was their top end. I think it was kind of their consistency the way through. The big question is with the next two, and we'll start with Nate Jawai. What do you do with him? It all depends on what you pay him, and obviously we're not privy to that sort of stuff. But, I mean, I like Outback Shaq. I like him a lot. I think he's a really good player, but can he play good minutes? Can he defend without fouling? Can he defend? Can he blitz off pick and rolls? You know, can he give you that type of defense that is really needed these days in the pick and roll? I mean, look at Melbourne in the finals. Even Pledger struggled to be that defender on the pick guy, and then jump out and give a hedge or a double. He just didn't have the feet for it. And if Pledger doesn't have the feet for it, it's very unlikely that Nate Jawai does either. I still think you go with him. I just think his ability to score down low is the best in the NBL. I don't think there's a better back-to-the-basket player than Nate. I love his game. He's a tough one to work into a team, though, defensively. But he had a couple of big games, and they looked really good when they played through him. I say sign him. DJ Newbolt, I say sign him as well. He's a slashing small forward. Didn't have a great year, but you know this whole team struggled. And in the games that they were good, he was good, which is a good indication. Devin Hall had a bad year. Young kid, 20 years old, first year out of America. I'll hold off on him, and we'll go back to my questions. Can you know the questions I had written here? Devin Hall, can he make a talent jump? I'm not privy to their camp. I don't know. You look at the problem with this team, stats-wise, they were middle to lower table in every category. And the question begs itself, what or who is this team? They were last in points per game, so they need to obviously improve their scoring. But I looked at every category from assists to rebounds, turnovers. They were always, you know, fifth, sixth, something like that, and then last in points. So they've got to get equal scoring. We know Trimble can score. We know Jawa can score. We know Newbull can score. The question is, who's going to be that other guy in? Their options are limited. They're a small community team. We'll see. Next question I had was, and this is a bit of a postulation, but what should, would or should Cairns forego the last year of Mike Kelly's deal? He's on a one-year deal to sign Rob Beveridge. Would they consider that? Would they say to Mike, we're going to pay you out your last year, but we're going to secure Beveridge while he's, you know, down and out, obviously passed on by Sydney and left Illawarra? Is he the type of guy who would commit to Cairns for 3 or 4 years? And then you've got, you know, arguably one of the three best top three coaches in the NBL long term at a time where his market is low because there's no NBL jobs available. Now that Sydney's been filled by Will Weaver, do they look to build an established program with him if he's interested? I mean, the other thing is Mike Kelly is the only coach out of contract at the end of 2020. So they could very easily go after Beveridge again next year. But then a number of teams sort of have that option to cut someone off from their last year and go for him as well. But I don't think that's really the way of the NBL. So that's an idea for Cairns. You know, they could bring Beveridge in as coach and Mike Kelly as an assistant. I don't know. I'm not saying that Mike Kelly was a huge problem for them last year or the reason why they only went 6-22. I think, you know, a team's success is due to their players and a team's failure is due to its players. I think coaches just got to put them in the right position. And I know that Kelly, it seemed to me from what I saw in the game, he butted heads with Nate Jawa. Now, I don't know if that's true or not, but they yelled at each other in a number of timeouts, had a differing opinion on a number of plays, and I think I actually showed one in NBL Pocket Podcast TV, which is on YouTube, where they're kind of butting heads about how they're going to defend on screens. I think for them, let's go back to Devin Hall. I wanted to sort of do with each team an unpopular opinion about each team, and my unpopular opinion that I think a lot of people would scoff at is I think you commit to Devin Hall long term. I think he had a bad year, but he is capable. He's a young kid coming over to Australia, probably had no idea which way was, as they say in Goodwill Hunting, probably didn't know which side of the bed to piss on. I think he's young, he's athletic, he's talented. I'd stay the course and I'd buy the stock. And if he's willing to sign long term and stay out of the G League until the off seasons in the NBL, I would do that. That's all I've really got for Cairns. We'll be revisiting these teams later on in a couple of weeks. Let's move on to the seventh place finishers. Speaking of Rob Beveridge before, it was the Illawarra Hawks. They were 12-16, tied sixth with New Zealand at 12-16. My questions for this team, actually, let's go through the roster first. So they've just signed their new coach, Mike Flynn, long-time assistant, long-time Illawarra Hawk. They've signed him to a two-year deal. They've got Todd Blanchfield, Emmett Narg, Daniel Greeder, Tim Conrad, and Angus Glover all under contract, most of them for 2 years. They've got Marshall Nelson available on a club option that I'd imagine they would pick up. I haven't heard anything to the contrary. And then their free agents are AJ Ogilvie, Kevin White, the stalwart of the NBL, David Anderson, And then the three most important ones for them, their three imports, Brian Conklin, Jordair Jett, and Cedric Jackson. My questions for this team. I had number one question, did Rob Beveridge lose this team? There was lots of infighting within this unit, especially those three free agents, those three imports, I should say, especially Conklin and Jackson. They seem to really dislike playing with each other, and at a point, their personal squabbles seem to get in the way of professional success. But the question had to be asked: Did Beveridge lose this team? Did he rub someone up the wrong way? I don't know. I'd love to speak to someone from, say, the Illawarra Mercury about that. I just think Beveridge is a great coach. I think sometimes it doesn't work out. I'm going to throw out a theory. I mean, Cedric Jackson is a guy who had dominated this league in the past and all of a sudden came up against a really bad year. Was he unable to sort of relinquish the reins of his talent and his position? And did that rub people the wrong way? Perhaps. I don't know. Maybe he was well-behaved. I have no idea. But certainly they didn't like playing with each other, so I wouldn't have thought they would return Cedric Jackson. The big question then becomes of three guys: Brian Conklin, Jordair Jett, and AJ Ogilvy. Do they bring back any one or all three of those guys? I think you bring back Brian Conklin. I like his game. He seemed to play hard. Him and Beveridge really didn't get along, seemingly. Maybe with a new coach, things are different. And a new set. I mean, the other one is David Anderson. Unique sort of talent. I would think he's going to go to the Phoenix. Just an older, established guy who I believe is from Melbourne, and I believe actually southeast Melbourne. Could be wrong on that. A big who is obviously going to come off the bench at his advanced age, and someone who can change up the game because he can shoot from the outside and is just so crafty. And actually had a pretty good season this year for what he was. And a guy I think is only too happy to help with player development. If I was the Phoenix, I'd actually pursue him rather aggressively. But also, if I was the Illawarra Hawks, I'd want to keep him. You've got an established rapport with him. He'd be one I'd be re-signing. AJ Ogilvy's a tough one. You know, was put in the highlight reel a bunch of times by Andrew Bogut. He'd be one who I'd be thinking, well, do we just kind of go in a different direction? I think his best team is somewhere else. He'd be better served somewhere else. But that's interesting. But yeah, definitely Conklin. And I think bring back Jordair Jett. I think he was a good player. Maybe they can upgrade at the import slot, but I actually thought he had a good year. And if you can find him, I'd actually only be too happy to give him the starting point guard spot under the proviso he got a haircut. I think a lot of his game, a lot of fallout out in his game was that those Tommy Knocker concussion-causing dreadlocks of his. I think... If he was your starting point guard, I actually think you'd be in an okay position. He's a hell of a defender. He's big. He's strong. If you can put shooters around him, you know, Blanchfield, David Anderson's not a bad one, and maybe someone else, a third import who I haven't quite thought of, that might work. Look at the questions I've got here. Mike Flynn, is he going to be able to control this team? He's a very unassuming and club guy. Is he going to be able to put the hammer down, or are these guys too familiar with him that they're going to walk all over him? Always a worry when assistants and interim coaches get brought up. The other question I had is where to from here for Beveridge? Obviously, I spoke about maybe there's an option for Cairns, but he doesn't seem to be a guy to me who'd be particularly keen to coach overseas. So that really begs the question, what else is left? Would he take an assistant coach job? That would be doubtful. That would be a big step back. I guess he's going to have to go overseas, but where he would go is a huge question. I asked this question, what was their biggest weakness of the Illawarra Hawks? And my question would be, are they shooting blanks? They were fifth in field goal percentage, sixth in three-point percentage, seventh or second last in three-point makes, and eighth in free throw percentage. This team shot 69% from the free throw, which was last by a long way. So you look at that, and they seem to shoot everything pretty poorly. They shoot from the floor poorly. They shoot from the outside poorly. And it's not like they shoot few and make a lot. They make very few outside shots. So that's something they have to improve. So with their third import spot, you'd want to look to someone who can hit shots, both preferably from the three-point line or take it off the dribble, and who's a threat to actually shoot from the outside so I can stretch the floor a little bit. I've got asked the question about the imports. One unpopular opinion I have about the Illawarra Hawks, about what I think they should do, I think they should bring back Demetrius Konga long-term. Konga had a good year for them a couple of years ago, a second MVP, I believe. He had a bad year this year in Adelaide, or a relatively mediocre year. He's been bouncing around the basketball planet like a pinball, from Spain to Belgium to the NBL and back again. He had a baddish year. He's now 28 years old. He's the type of guy who maybe you could get on a bit of a cheap, but maybe even long-term, and say, hey, we want you to be at home in Illawarra. You're our import. You can get your body in shape here. You're not jumping on flights here and there. And I think that was a big part of his problem this year. I think he was yo-yoing around the planet and lost fitness, or just didn't quite have the focus. And also the problems that seemingly existed in Adelaide, which we'll talk about when we get to them in the next episode. But yeah, I'd bring back Konga. I didn't see anything in his game where I thought he's done, he's no good. He's a good player, and he'd be a fine import, especially along with Conklin and Jett, and maybe they can get a local who can shoot. Maybe there's someone on this team who can develop a good jump shot, outside of Blanchfield, obviously. Yeah, that's what I do with them. So that's number 7, Illawarra Hawks. Number 6, New Zealand Breakers. Let's go through their list. Coach is Kevin Braswell. He's contracted for the next 2 years. That might be a bit of a... I think they'd like a little bit more flexibility with their coaching there. Here's who they've got contracted for next year. They're the biggest contracted team, I believe. They've got Corey Webster, Tom Abercrombie, Shay Illy, Jared Weeks, Finn Delaney, and Jordan... I can't pronounce his surname. Nagatar? I hope I'm pronouncing that right. Pardon me, Jordan. So that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 players contracted, you know, 4 of which oscillate within their starting lineup: Webster, Abercrombie, Illy, and Weeks. Look at their free agents, big ones. Ty Wesley, Majok Majok, Sean Long, Armani Moore, and Patrick Richard. My big question for this team is, they've put 2 years and quite a bit of money seemingly into Corey Webster and Tom Abercrombie. Can Corey Webster return to his 2014 to 2016 scoring form, where he was around the sort of 15 to 20 points per game? He now enters into next season. He'll be 31 / 32 years old next season. A difficult age to rediscover form from, gosh and bother, 4 or 5 years ago. That is a question that's a tough one to answer, but if I had to put the odds on it, I'd say more than likely not. I think it's hard for a guy at 32 to all of a sudden recapture the youth, the play he had in his youth 4 years ago. But we shall see. He's been injury riddled the last 2-3 years almost. Hopefully he can come back from that. The next question I had: Tom Abercrombie is 32/33 next season. He's born in 87. Last season, he had the lowest free throw attempts of his career since he was a rookie, in which he played 13 games. And the reason why I bring up free throw attempts is, if you're on the wing in the NBL, in any league, you got to be aggressive. You've got to be going at the basket and be able to put it on the deck and create shots for you and yourself. The fact that he's getting to the line very little suggests to me he's content to sit out there and shoot a lot of threes, and just not attack the hoop. And it's not what you need from that position. Can he do a David Barlow and rejuvenate himself and get to the rack? Again, a huge if for the Breakers. Then the bigger question is, can they retain Ty Wesley and Sean Long? And or Sean Long? Sean Long, I understand it, is sitting out this little break until NBA Summer League, so he can hit that pretty hard and maybe get an NBA contract. He had a good year. You know, he was a big scorer, he was a big rebounder, shot blocker. I believe this team led the league in blocks per game. Did struggle in a few other areas, defense and fouling on defense. By all accounts, if Sean Long is returning to the NBL, I don't see any reason to suspect he would go anywhere else. I haven't heard rumblings about him going anywhere else. the bigger worry is not so much whether he'd go to another NBL club, but return to the NBL at all. There's been no communication, and he seems fairly firmly fixed on the Summer League. Ty West is an interesting one. Apparently, he becomes an import again going into 2020. I'm not too sure. You'll have to read Santa Maria's latest article on free agency. I suggest you read everything he writes. He'd be a good one for this team, but he'd be a good one for so many teams, and I think they're going to be under a lot of pressure to show him the money. Another question for this team: do they persist with Illy and Weeks or splash out on a point guard import? Can those two make the jump? They had a tough year with those two, and not because they're bad players, but because they're not as good as the people that play their position elsewhere. Cotton, Trimble, Casper Ware, amongst others. Can one of them make the jump and become serviceable to good? If that happens, there's no problem. But do they sort of cut their losses and bring in an in-point point guard? You know, it would be a tough pill to swallow, considering that you know, you've contracted two point guards and then you're going to bring them both off the bench. It's a matter of maybe they've made their bed and they have to lie in it. Toughy. Here's a fifth question. If they retain Sean Long, can he learn to defend without fouling, sitting in a zone like they did for most of the end of the year, which brought them success because it was able to keep him on the floor? But it's not going to do it. They were last in opponent three-point percentage. They allowed teams to shoot on them 39.1% from the outside. That's nearly 40%. The next highest was Illawarra with 37.5. Now, that's only a difference of sort of 2%, but it was a huge jump, especially from the top of the table. And what's interesting about the three-point percentage stat is, if you look at it, it's a stat that really directly correlates between success. At the top four teams, or the teams with the lowest opponent three-point field goal percentage, were Perth, Sydney, Perth, Melbourne, Brisbane, and then the top four. You know, so it is a strong, not cemented, but certainly a strong indicator of how a team's going to perform and whether they're going to win or not. You can't sit in a zone against NBL clubs. This is not a Monday night social league where guys are, you know, can't be trusted to play man-to-man defense. You have to play a man. So that means Sean Long learning how to play defense in the Southern Hemisphere. If I can express my unpopular opinion about the Breakers, I think if they were to lose Sean Long, it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world. His lack of defensive ability without fouling hamstrings them terribly defensively. And if he was to leave, it would open up a whole bunch of options around Ty Wesley if they retain him and maybe an import they get. Looking at those imports, the other ones are Armani Moore and Patrick Richard. I don't think they'd be too manic about bringing either of those two back. I think they're best to, if they can resign Sean Long, they should. But if he's pressing or they have another option they want to go in, I actually don't see it as the worst thing in the world not bringing him back. Hey, unpopular opinion, what can I say? That's three of them. Let's go to the fourth one. This is going to be a short episode. Fifth place, tied fourth with the Brisbane Bullets, was the Adelaide 36ers at 14-14. Their lineup is as such. Joey Wright, their coach, has a three-year contract that, by all accounts, he's pretty keen to get out of. Contracted for next season, they have Daniel Johnson, Anthony Drumick, Jack McVay, and the man who was signed about a month or two ago, Jacob Wiley, on a two-year deal. Their free agents are very coveted and very spoken about in rumours. Nathan Sobey, Majok Deng, Demetrius Konga, Brendan Tice, Sean Bruce, and then they've got club options on Harry Froling and Ramon Moore, and then a player option on Adam Doyle, so he can choose to opt in, which I'm sure he probably will. My big question for this team, and this is a question that I'm going to be posing to Botti next time I can get him on the program: has Joey Wright become a nuisance? Toxic, even. And I refer to a quote by Fox Sports' Olgan Ulick, hope I'm pronouncing his name right, in which he said that Joey Wright and I'm paraphrasing, but I hope I'm saying it right. He said something like, Joey Wright's return to Adelaide is the nail in the coffin of Nathan Sobey looking to sign elsewhere, implying that Joey Wright's kind of lost this locker room, that guys don't want to play for him. And Joey Wright at this point has kind of become like Vegemite. You either love him or you hate him. I love him. I think he's a great coach, and I think I'd love to play for him. And I think when I say that, I think the guys that agree with me are Daniel Johnson, Drimmick, McVeigh, Wiley, Harry Froling, and Tice. Obviously, they all seem to love him, and for good reason. You know, he's a fun, precocious sort of coach who, precocious, if you will, you know, does a bunch of fun things, messes with people. I've made a cartoon about this on the Trash Talk story that they tell. Pardon me. But he does seem to be divisive. Players seem to be growing wary of him yelling at them, maybe, I don't know. And Sobey might be one of them, especially at his advancing age. But, I mean, look at what Joey's done as far as getting Mitch Creek to a G League level, getting Terrence Ferguson to an NBA level. He's a very good coach and seemingly a very good recruiter. So it'll be interesting to see what they do. So the big question is Sobey gone? By all accounts, yes. And he really has two options that are most spoken about. One is Brisbane, and one is Southeast Melbourne, Phoenix. Speaking about Brisbane as well, Brisbane apparently seem to be targeting Melo Trimble as well. So a backcourt of Trimble and Sobey would be pretty interesting, especially after they've put so much money in Glidden and Kadee. I think at this point, Kadee is a backup, so it would be wild. My next question for Adelaide is, what was their biggest weakness and what's the remedy or their biggest need? And I think the answer would be their half-court offense, and they've got to play some defense. They are last in opponent points per game, 95.8. They do play a high pace, so that's expected, but they, you know, and then second last in opponent field goal percentage at 46.8. So they give up a lot of points at a high percentage comparative to the league. They've got to play some defense. And to me, I think the answer is kind of in front of you. I love Jacob Wiley. Love his game. Love his intensity. You need to get more minutes for him. So let's go through and see who they should re-sign. So the big three are Nathan Sobey. He's on the move. So he's out, which is a bad loss because he's not an import. He's one of the best locals. Big loss. And they should have done whatever they can. Maybe the relationship isn't soured and ruined and they can still get to him, but he would be one I'd definitely re-sign. Majok Deng seems to be pretty interested in moving again. I've heard reports, again, he didn't like playing for Joey Wright. I don't know if that's true or not. We shall see. But he's a guy who, nice piece, great shooter and everything, but you know, gets absolutely manhandled on defense. Guys take him down low, take him off the dribble, all kinds of stuff. And then the next one is who I spoke about, Demetrius Konga. I like Konga, and I think if he had an undisturbed preseason and was with a team long term, and you know, people were down on Konga, and yeah, he had a substandard year by his standards, but look at it this way. He came into a team sort of mid-season, having been hanging out in Spain, training, not knowing. It's a very difficult situation for an import to just come into a team mid-season and all of a sudden produce. I think if he'd been given a while to, especially a team like Adelaide that's Joey Wright, it's established, it's concrete. I think if he was given time to have a preseason with the team, I think he'd still be a very good player. And then Ramon Moore's got a club option, which they'll take up, and surely they'll take up the club option on Harry Froling. The interesting thing about Froling is, people are talking about, he's saying, oh, you know, I'm looking for forward to the draft next year, as in not July of this year, but next year. I believe he's eligible for this year's draft. Him and his management better work out whether that's true or not. I actually think he's got a really good chance. Not a great chance, but if a team wanted to draft him, keep his options and stash him overseas, I think, you know, a big seven-footer who can shoot pass, and a guy who really just needs to work on his body, lose a bit of weight, shift a bit of weight, gain a bit of muscle. I think he's a really intriguing player. And with a late second-round pick, I don't see why not. Is he eligible for this draft? Is he declaring for the draft? Is he taking it seriously? I understand he'll be at Summer League and two thumbs. Ramon Moore, they'll take the club option on. I even think they have activated that. I've got a little asterisk here. Unpopular opinion for Adelaide. They're top heavy. Daniel Johnson, Harry Froling, Jacob Wiley. They all play the 4-5 spots. Where do you find room for them? And then Conger as well, who would work well in a couple of minutes at that sort of small ball 4. I think we'd all be pretty intrigued by a team of like a starting lineup of Froling, Wiley, Conger, Drimmick, Sobey, you know, something like that. Or Ramon Moore set up point guard. That's my kind of unpopular opinion. They're all good players and I all like them. I like Daniel Johnson a lot. Is it kind of there's one too many there? Are there too many people at the table and not enough plates? And does Harry Froling, is he going to make a huge jump going into next season? And that's your worry. Well, not worry, you always want your players to play well, but what happens when he makes a jump and wants more playing time or deserves more playing time? And then you've got Daniel Johnson, who's contracted, I believe, for 2 years. That's when it becomes interesting. So my next question, I guess, is can DJ and Froling start the game and play together? Are they a combination that's going to work? They all of a sudden get very slow defensively. I mean, if this is a team that's going to start looking at half-court offense and playing defense, might not be the best 1-2 in the front court to do it. All questions for the future. Guys, that's actually all I've got for today. Next episode, we'll do teams 4, 3, 2, and 1. Brisbane, Sydney, Melbourne, and Perth. In the meantime, definitely go to NBL.com and the app and read along with Liam Santamaria, who's probably the authority on all this free agent stuff. I'll still be coming out with a few videos. Hopefully get a few guests in, ex-players and stuff. I've got a few people poking around, but it's just finding the schedule to get it done. In other news, Andrew Bogut with the Warriors, seemingly playing pretty well, starting a few games, pitching in with sort of 5 to 10 points, 5 to 10 rebounds, a couple of blocks. He looks fantastic. A lot of people kind of rubbished his move over there. I think he's proved that he's really good and hopefully taking the standard of the NBL with him. And it's a discussion. Sydney Kings have signed Will Weaver as their head coach, sort of veering away from Rob Beveridge. I'll comment on that now, but I'll also do it in the next episode. Interesting hire. I think Will Weaver is the more exciting hire. Rob Beveridge is already older, more established, has an NBL pedigree and a resume, and a good one. I think Beveridge would have been a very good choice by the Kings. It'd be interesting to hear why they've chosen to go with Weaver. Not that it needs any explanation. He's very credible and very credited. G League Coach of the Month. He's there with the New Jersey Nets affiliate, the Brooklyn Nets affiliate, the New Jersey Long Island Nets or whatever they are. And they look like they're going to win the G League playoffs, which is always pretty good. I wonder what his pitch was to the Sydney Kings, and obviously he's too busy now to answer questions from the NBL press, but that'd be interesting to see. Brian Bowen is, from all the big boards I've seen him on in the NBA draft, he's scheduled to go anywhere between 50 and 60 in the NBA draft. That's a bad place to be in if you're a prospect. Anything happens in the second round, let alone the last sort of 15 of the second round, you never know what teams are going to do and with those picks. Indications are it's pretty strong. Most big boards I've been to have him there, and he wouldn't be there if he wasn't the 55th best prospect. It's just whether teams want to even bother maturing a talent like that. I think 55, I think the Knicks have that pick, which would be pretty good for him. They're a young team. They're obviously tanking and rebuilding. There'd be a team that would give him some minutes and be interested in maturing a talent like him. So that's good stuff. I'm just going to quickly jump online now and have a look at what the NBL has to offer in the way of stuff. Matt Nielsen, assistant coach, looking at a head coaching job. Obviously, there's none in the NBL, so I don't know where he's going to go. He's already done the sort of player development coaching stuff with, I believe, the Spurs. Whether he'd be willing to do that again or just go around as an assistant again. It's not exactly prison. It's not the worst job in the world, especially at the Wildcats. I mean, if he's looking at becoming a head coach next year, I mean, Lamanis isn't a free agent this year. You would have thought he'd sign for more than a year. There's no real jobs available in the NBL other than Cairns. So, you know, I don't know what sort of head coaching job he's looking at. I don't think he'd be on the G League radar. He may be. Other than that, that is really all that I have. Guys, thank you so much. Next week, I'll be doing the top four teams in the NBL, hoping to release some YouTube content as well. As always, follow me on Twitter at NBL Pocket Pod. Thanks very much. Bye.